It's a special edition of Essential Pittsburgh. Looking back, looking ahead, 2014-2015, the events that shaped our year and our future. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Since 1968, has there been a more volatile year in America than the one we just experienced? From the riots in Ferguson to the nationwide demonstrations in reaction to police violence inflicted on African Americans, to the debate over immigration and the continued push for gay rights in the United States, the American landscape was filled with societal upheaval in 2014. One man who has been chronicling it all in Pittsburgh is award-winning Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman. He joins us now in Studio A to put as much of it in perspective as he can. Tony Norman, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good to be here, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
What do you see as being the seminal signature event or events of 2014?
Actually, that is difficult to isolate, Paul. I would say that there, ironically enough, events that happened in other places that had an impact on Pittsburgh. I think the events in Ferguson, I think the events in Staten Island, in New York, where Eric Garner was suffocated. I think that these events that seriously questioned the credibility of the police engendered a protest movement. I think that those things were really important in the history of Pittsburgh, even though they happened in other places, because Pittsburgh had a reaction to those things. And so you began to see a burgeoning protest movement here in Pittsburgh, of all places.
And when you look at the reaction that people have had to incidents of police violence, certainly the Leon Ford episode here in Pittsburgh, the story of an African-American man who was pulled over and misidentified. The police thought that he was someone else.
Right.
He pulled out identification that proved he was, in fact, Leon Ford. But nevertheless, there were events that led up to him being paralyzed, being shot, and left a paraplegic for the rest of his life.
Right. That was a really important moment in Pittsburgh history as well. Though until recently, it didn't have that same resonance. It wasn't like Johnny Gamage, but that immediately had seismic impact around. And for some reason, the Leon Ford incident did not generate that until after there had been trials and hearings and so forth. It began to gather some steam. And now it is clearly at the forefront of the popular imagination here in Pittsburgh, but it took a while. So I would say that it benefited in an odd way from the things that were happening in Ferguson, from the things that were happening in Staten Island. And also, and I have to give you folks credit, you guys had an event during the summer in which you had Chief McClay and various people from the community and various folks, and both Leon Ford and his father were there. And it was a very poignant show because they got to talk about their pain and got, in a sense, to hold the police accountable, the police chief, and to say, what are you going to do about this kind of police malpractice? And I think that, there's been a noticeable shift in the reaction that people have. The police are no longer getting the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's healthy for a democracy. People are starting to question what happened here. And they're starting to ask important questions about the role of the police. Should they be as militarized as they are? Should they be as quick to put down African-American men as they are, to shoot, to kill? What is the criteria for doing any of these things? People are asking really good questions now.
And where do you see things going from here with a new police chief in place? Cameron McClay was confirmed by the city council. He's been sworn in by the mayor. And you have talked about feeling that Cameron McClay really has a fresh and enlightened point of view that he's bringing to the Pittsburgh Police Department. So where do you see those relations, the community and police relations, going from where they have been, where they are now, to where they might be in the future?
I think they can only get better, Paul. I mean, quite frankly, I think they've been at such a low level for so many years. And I think there have been generally a loss of faith, at least from my perspective, in the Pittsburgh police. I think the Nate Harper years, I mean, he was ineffectual at best and corrupt. And so nothing really positive happened during his years. And the relations between the community and the police only deteriorated. And I think that Chief McClay Ashley has the right attitude. I mean, he's coming from a community that had a much more progressive approach to policing. And I think that that's going to begin to trickle down to the Pittsburgh police. I think the Pittsburgh police really are between a rock and a hard place because they don't know any better. They haven't had inspired leadership. They haven't had inspired leadership in terms of City Hall, and they haven't had inspired leadership in terms of their commanders and their chief. And now they do. And I think that the attitude of the Peduto administration and the attitude of Cameron McClay are going to make a big difference because I think officers understand that they can't, the status quo cannot continue.
We're talking with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman here on Essential Pittsburgh on this special edition looking ahead and looking back at 2014. You write so often about cultural issues, and you have commented at length about the culture of violence in America. Mm-hmm. You have been an outspoken critic of the gun lobby and of the laws that currently exist that allow people to own firearms in the United States. You've railed about this issue and on this issue.
All the good it does me, huh?
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, we seem to be on right. A kind of a treadmill. Regardless of how you feel about guns, mm-hmm. things don't seem to be changing. In fact, the laws seem to be turning more in favor
right.
of the people who want to own guns and want Americans to be able to own whatever firearms they wish. Are you frustrated about that? I mean, talk about your feelings and what kind of advocacy you are going to champion going forward.
I think frustration is a good word, especially when you see polls that show that Americans are more comfortable than ever with gun ownership. It's only been a few years since the massacre of the children in Newtown, and it seems that attitudes have become more solidified towards an uncritical acceptance of the more guns, the merrier. And so I'm deeply frustrated by that because I thought that if ever there was going to be a turning in American attitudes, that would be it, that Newtown would be it. But it's the opposite. What can one do? I mean, all I can do is continue to rail and hope that at some point people will get tired of the body count and that they will begin to be in favor of common sense gun control. I'm not one of those folks who wants to confiscate all the guns. That's not practical. It would be ludicrous to advocate something like that. But I think there should be common sense, you know, controls on who can buy a weapon. We should no longer make it possible for blind people to buy guns. We should no longer make it possible for mentally disturbed people to buy guns. People who are convicted felons, things like that. And maybe some other common sense things like maybe you can only buy one gun a month as opposed to five. You know, various things like that. And there should be waiting periods. I mean, this stuff is not radical that I'm advocating. It's just common sense and things that the mainstream of America once agreed with. But it's gotten away now. People want to be strapped and they want to have open carry and they want to be able to shoot someone if they feel disrespected. And I think going back to the Wild West days, that's not tenable.
I compared 2014 with 1968 mm-hmm. in terms of the people taking to the streets to advocate passionately for one cause or another. Would you say that's a fair comparison?
Absolutely. In fact, when you first mentioned that to me, I thought it was very apt. It feels like a year where there were great shifts in the public consciousness. I think the protests against the police is, to me, I never would have imagined that. I never would have dreamed that. And I think that it's opening up a space to discuss all sorts of things, systemic violence in our society, unequal education, structural racism and structural violence. And I think it's opening up a space for even the Black community to have a very hard and honest and difficult conversation with itself about what we can do to facilitate stronger schools, stronger communities. I think they're all tied up. And the fact that we talk about these things separately, I think it creates false choices. I think they're all part of a big package. And yeah, I think that the fact is that if we don't have this discussion, we're just going to fall back as a society and we're just going to go back to what we had before, which was just horrible.
This was also a very impactful year for the August Wilson Center.
You wrote
many a column about the August Wilson Center. As the year comes to a close, do you feel like there's closure with the August Wilson Center in terms of having the worst of its problems behind it?
Every day it seems that there's always somebody comes forth who says that the August Wilson owes them some money and so forth. I mean, you know, that was such a badly run institution for years. Yeah, if I say yes, I feel more optimistic and so forth. I really do. But having said that, I still expect there to be plenty of bumps in the road. Everything is going to depend upon the new director and the new board of directors, if they're visionary people or if they're just bureaucrats. You need people of vision with strong personalities and who have real skills in money management, governance, and all of that. People who can set down an agenda for the August Wilson Center, articulate what the August Wilson Center is all about, explain it to the people, and drum up support. Because this institution will sink if it doesn't have the support of the people right out of the gate.
I wanted to talk about something that you, on the day that we are recording this segment, you wrote about the situation with the movie The Interview
right.
and all of the controversy surrounding it. There are all sorts of angles to approach this story mm-hmm. from, but the chief among them seems to be the idea that no matter how bad this movie may or may not be, at the end of the day, do we really want terrorists saying, if you show this, we'll attack you, so
right.
you better take it out of your theater?
It's the most disheartening cultural event of the year. And the fact that it's happening at the end of the year is really something. Yes, it looks like any tin pot dictator or a hacker collective can now dictate what Hollywood or some cultural institution puts out there. That's very bad. That's very bad for all of us. Having said that, Sony Pictures Entertainment really botched this from the very beginning.
How so?
It seems that if a big multinational corporation and you put all of your information on servers that are accessible to hackers, I mean, they have been broken into before. And so it wasn't like it was the first time it ever happened. They were just irresponsible in the way that they expose their intellectual property and personal data to thievery by these hackers who were apparently in the employ of North Korea. And I think they really should have coordinated with the government and did a real threat assessment to find out if these folks who were saying, hey, there's going to be a 9/11 style retaliation to the theaters that showed us whether there was any truth to that. And I understand that theaters would have pulled out anyway because no one wants to get sued.
Right, because the government said that the threat was not credible.
Right, right. But I mean, I get the impression that there wasn't much coordination between the government and Sony. I mean, I think President Obama said, hey, I wish Sony had talked to me because I would have said, hey, show the movie. To me, that is actually quite persuasive. I mean, even if the theaters don't show it, I think that Sony should have worked out a system where, okay, anyone who wants to see it will live stream it somehow, or we'll send you copies of it if you want to pay for it, et cetera, et cetera.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose, though? I mean, isn't this about coming out of your house, not having to hide because the terrorists
right.
are out there, but being able to, because this is the United States of America, mm-hmm. to walk into a theater and see the movie of your choice, no matter how offensive
that would be
it
ideal.
Might be.
That would be ideal. But if the theaters aren't cooperating, if the theaters are too afraid to do it, I mean, because you remember just a couple years ago, some nut went to a Batman screening in Colorado, Aurora, Colorado, and shot up the theater. And so people were imagining that kind. That's not so far-fetched in a country as awash with guns as ours is. And so, you know, you have all these theater owners who are thinking, oh, man, I don't want to deal with the lawsuit. I don't want to deal with the death and the blood. And so they're not going to show it. I mean, the four biggest theaters pulled out and said that we're not going to show it. And so once you lost those guys and then you start losing the smaller chains and then losing a lot of the independents, Sony had no choice. So,
what if Sony just said, whoever wants to show it, it's available to any theater that wants to show it?
I think that would be.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because I think that here in this let's say in Pittsburgh, there would be at least one or two theaters that would show it because they would be defiant and that's the sort of institutions they are. I think that that would be the best of all possible solutions, that theaters, even if it's just one or two in a given city, would show it. That would be a strike for artistic freedom and independence. What we have now is a craven capitulation to cyber terrorism, and that can't be good for our democracy in the long run, because what you have is Kim Jong-un basically being Rex Reed. He can dictate what movies get shown, and that is not acceptable.
Last issue I wanted to touch upon is the issue of gay rights, gay marriage. We've seen a lot of the LGBT community has seen, from their perspective, a great deal of progress on these
Absolutely.
Issues. You've written about them. You've talked about it being the last frontier of civil rights in America.
Right.
So how do you assess that?
You know, I am so impressed with the slow and steady march toward acceptance by our lesbian and gay brothers and sisters. I think that they have had the most remarkable civil rights evolution in American history. If you just think about it, when I started my column back in 1995, 1996, the few times I wrote about gay issues, it hit a nerve. People couldn't believe that I was writing about stuff like that. They said, you know, why are you writing about these people? They're not Americans. And to go from that, from the attitude of let's keep gay folks under a rock or in obscurity and shadows, to one where you have whole networks devoted to entertainment for gay and lesbian, LGBT and trans and all the other iterations, is just amazing. I think that this revolution won't stop, and it shouldn't, because homophobia is the most blatant of the last of the acceptable prejudices. It is in your face. And we all know folks who belong to this community who are the most decent people that we know. And to discriminate against them is heartrending. And the fact that they're now coming to their own, God bless them.
I want to have one final postscript to this whole discussion, and that is, you know, we've talked about the good and the bad and the ugly of 2014. What is the best thing to come out of 2014, in your opinion?
You know, I keep circling back to people finding their protest voice, finding that they have a right to speak out, finding that they don't just have to take it anymore, that they have a say as to the direction of their society. And I think that people asking critical questions about law enforcement is only going to bode well for our society in general. That's the best thing. That's the most impressive thing, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's the thing I wrote about the most this year.
Tony Norman, award-winning columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joining us to talk about 2014 and looking ahead to 2015. Tony, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your appearances on Essential Pittsburgh this year, and we look forward to reading more of your great columns.
Oh, they've all been fun, Paul. Thanks for having me. This is a riot.
A riot.
A riot. Not a riot with a capital R, small r.
I gotcha. Well, thank you, Tony Norman, and thank you for listening to this special edition of Essential Pittsburgh, Looking Back, Looking Ahead, 2014-2015, the events that shaped our year and our future. We look forward to another year of Essential Pittsburgh, which gets started on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend, everyone. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.